We're speaking with our Idaho representative, Mark Sauter, here in District 1, and we're going to be talking about all the things that happened in this year's session of the Idaho Legislature that adjourned on April 4th. This is our first big catch-up on that. Mark, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for giving me this option.
Well, overall, let's throw out the general question here. How do you feel the session went?
Well, the number one priority is to set a balanced budget, and we did that. So that's success. I have some concerns about some of the bills and some of the priorities that we've set. But that's in some respects to be expected. There's a number of different opinions and a number of different issues across the state, and I think we're all supposed to vote and to carry the interests of our districts. So for that, I'll respectfully I give respect to all the different representatives for that. That challenging part is to have a good, solid debate and dialogue with everyone over these different issues. And that's one thing that we don't always that I just don't always see is that dialogue or debate about an issue and trying to figure out, so where is the bill that's just right? And a lot of bills you either vote for or against because you feel like they're 60% right and 40% wrong. But the reality is you only have a choice of yes or no. Those are the only two buttons you have. You can't say yes, but I just don't like Section B. It's if you don't like Section B very much, then you just vote no. And that's the tough part about some of the bills that we see are they different need a different version to make them better. And sometimes you just keep getting versions that you don't agree with. So, but that's politics. So, that's just how it is. So, but anyway, overall, I think we did pass some, and we were successful. We did get some local bills passed that I think will help. We did a couple of things for education that will help. And I have some concerns about other bills that were passed. So we'll have to wait and see how those play out.
Okay, so some of the reporting we saw up here, as you really kind of just mentioned, is that the session was at times contentious and divisive, but there were, I will mention, a few things that went through unanimously. So there was some accord on some things. The Idaho House voted unanimously to pass Senate Bill 1001, which is a law designed to protect free speech and frivolous strategic lawsuits against public participation. And you must have voted yes since it was unanimous. Another one
Yes.
was that was unanimous was House Bill 158. It's a media shield law that protects sources who provide confidential information or documents to journalists. So both those went through. So there was some areas of broad agreement.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, a local part of the 158 bill was that day I saw Ben Olson in the hallways, and I
From
know
the
he was
Sandpoint
here to
Reader, he
testify.
was down there to
Yes, from the
testify. Yeah.
yeah. So that was kind of nice. You're out down here 420 miles from home, and you see a friendly, familiar face. So,
Well,
yeah. So that
obviously
made it
he
really
felt
easy
it.
to vote for that.
Yeah. Well, he felt it was important, being a journalist himself, I'm sure.
Sure.
So there were, according to the Idaho Capital Sun, a whopping 1,036 pieces of legislation that were prepared this year, which is substantially more than we've seen in previous years. Comparing it to 2023, there were 861. So the question that raised in my mind was, well, does that mean the legislature is being more productive, or is it kind of flooding the zone and it actually makes the legislature less productive? And what's your take on that?
I'd say it turns things into being less productive. There's just with that volume of bills in a relatively short time, you're just forced to not you just don't have the time to really think some of the bills through. And even when they're in their infancy, the way the bills are, they just get introduced into committee, and oftentimes they're just not privileged. They're not a something that you can reread the evening before the bill comes in. So if you're on that committee, you get a first glimpse. Usually it's that morning or that afternoon, and then you need to vote should it be printed or not, and then you have a hearing for it perhaps a day or two later, sometimes it's a week later. So the amount of exposure you have to some of these bills is really limited, and when you have 1,000 of them, there's just a lot of things to try and track. So you do find yourself trying to prioritize, you know, these are the bills that are the most important, and these are the bills that are going to affect home, and then focusing in on them. And then there is a frustrating part of this, and that is that a lot of the bills, there really is no amending them. It's just they're going to be run one way or the other by the bill sponsor. And either you can get on board with it, or you can, you know, just say no and vote against them. But it's frustrating when you can't really get with the bill sponsor, or there's just not enough time to meet with all the different bill sponsors and say, ask questions, and then also be able to be a part of amending those things. So that's just with that volume, it's frustrating. Another part of it is we had supposedly we had, you don't know how many bills each representative has had written, but the word on the street is we have at least one representative in the House that had 70 bills written, 7-0, and another one or two that had 50 each, 5-0 each. That's 170 bills between three legislators. And that number of bills, they didn't all start with them. You know, a number start from out of state or in response to something else. And that's besides just the sheer volume, there's only a staff of about 12 people here in the Capitol that write bills. So if you're somebody like me that comes down and says, I want to run a bill for a resolution about Albany Falls Dam, for instance, then you need to get kind of weasel in and get to the bill writer who hopefully has time for you to run your local, you know, listen to you and then write a local bill. And I've had bills written in the past in the off season, you know, before December, say. And you do some of that, but also some of the stuff just comes through in the winter, and that's really the season that you need to start getting some of these bills written. So there's a capacity issue with state staff, and there's also a capacity issue with the legislature itself. And then there's a limited amount of time here in the Capitol. So you put all three of those things together, you know, adding 20 to 30% on top of the typical bill load is makes for even more challenges.
Is there any discussion or talk by the leadership to try to, you know, cut back on this number if you have one legislator putting in 70 bills or 50 bills, and obviously that is going to eat up a lot of the staff time and then committee time, right, when they get introduced there. So I just wondering, is there discussion about, okay, let's find a way to dial these guys back so they're really just bringing legislation that's most important to their constituents?
Yeah, there has been dialogue about that, you know, of in saying, hey, let's limit it to 8 per legislator or 12 per legislator, full well knowing that a number of the legislators, especially the newer ones, they may not bring a bill at all the first year they're here. So that has happened, and there has been discussion about that. There was a bill that was started by a freshman, by the way, that said you can't bring more than I think 10 or 15 bills. But that I don't think that bill even got a hearing. So and there are people that will then say, well, that's going to curtail someone's First Amendment rights, which I'm not so sure that it does. But regardless, there's lots of differences of opinion here, and that was one of them was, you know, so what's that right number? And then what happens with a lot of bills? It takes a couple of years by the time you really get something, you get something written in a draft form, and then it finally may not get a hearing for a year, until somebody you get somebody's ear, or the right person's ear, and then they say, "Hey, let's look at this and see what we can do." So, a long answer for you, I know, but that's
Okay, well,
sorry.
yeah, we'll have
I'll
to
try and be
see.
more succinct.
We'll have to see what might transpire on that in the future, because it is an unworkable number, a thousand bills coming up and taking up time. So let's circle back on actually the first thing you talked about, is that's the legislature's duty to produce a balanced budget. There were four major bills that actually resulted in tax cuts in one way or another. Let's run through those and see, get your take on those and how you voted on them. One was House Bill 40, which is lowering the individual and corporate income tax from 5.695 to 5.3%. So that's what about a point, 0.4 of a percent. And the effect of that, aside from saving taxpayers' money, is going to reduce state revenue by $253 million. Give me your take on that and how you came down on it.
The uncomfortable part about it is these bills came forward early, and another part of it is we had not yet settled on a revenue, a revenue to set our budgets to. So the question again is, yes or no, will you vote for a tax cut for the people in your area and statewide? So on House Bill 40, I voted for it because I asked myself the usual, would the people in my district want this, and would they benefit from it? And I thought, well, we're getting to having a agreed upon revenue number for the state, and this will sort out. We've got the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee working on balancing all these numbers out. So I voted for it. Do I have concerns? It's what I hear in your voice, and I'll just clear the air and say, yes, I have concerns that we're counting on growth to continue to pay for infrastructure issues here in our state. And I think that's a slippery slope to always count on having another 20 to 50,000 people moving into the state to keep paying. And they're using all of our existing services too. So yes, I'm concerned about it. I did vote for the tax cuts, but I certainly have concerns about it.
Okay, so another bill is House Bill 304, and it shifts money to a state property tax reduction fund. Also, it's a fund to pay for school facilities. This reduces state revenue by $100 million, and I don't have more details on that bill, but give us your take on it.
Now it's supposed to be $100 million. $50 million goes directly to the counties for tax relief, and $50 million to pay off state, if I remember right, off on state le on education levies and bonds. So that should be property tax relief. That was the number one thing that most people talked to me about when I was campaigning, was they're concerned about our property tax situation. So that did make some sense. I would have preferred that we would have used the homeowners exemption for that, because it's a direct impact on those that are that they're these are our Idahoans' homes. And I thought that was a better way to go. But again, that was not an option. So the option was, do you want to give some property tax relief through this bill and then help pay down some student or some school levies and bonds? So I voted for it, with some trepidation, knowing that this isn't exactly what I thought most of our residents really wanted, but it gets closer to getting them some property tax relief. I've heard it's supposedly going to help by to the tune of 10% or 15% for tax relief, but I'll wait until I actually see the numbers to know that that's true. But it should be some certain tax relief for our residents.
Well, on the property tax front, there have been a variety of discussions on ways to limit property tax increases, which we're seeing. Homeowners are seeing them skyrocket because our property values are going up so much. Is there anything on the cusp, maybe in the next year or two, for something that would limit the escalation?
We'll certainly try that some more, next session. Changing the exemptions was how the exemption, the number of the amount of the homeowner's exemption, that was the number one thing I thought needed to be done. I actually had a draft bill written up for that, that we would have one that would it would be, I think I put my number at 200 or 250, and which is about double what we have. And that seemed to be something to me that would help everybody in our own district and statewide, actually. If the number was set at 250, it had the potential to hurt a few people with lowered value homes. So that was some concern once I finally had all the tax commission numbers run. But the 200 to 250 was an option that I thought of. But the other piece was, other option is that instead of the assessments taking effect for 1 year, to have an assessment for a property be taken over 3 years to average that out. So that would slow down the increase, the increase, the spiking of increases. But it would also slow down if any properties did go down, it would slow down the effect of those reductions. So averaging it out would be helpful, but again, the work that was done here in the Capitol with by other legislators was not accepted through our leadership and didn't get a hearing through our Tax and Revenue Committee. So what we had to vote on was what we did vote on, which was, I think, House Bill 231.
Well, that was actually 304 was on the
Oh,
property
excuse me.
tax.
Okay, 304.
But I was going to ask you about House Bill 231. That increases the grocery tax credit that helps
Yes.
offset the sales tax that Idahoans pay for food. And it
Yes.
increases it to $155 per year for everyone. So I guess
Right.
in a household of, four, it'd be four times that much, right? Being like
Right, right.
$600 a year. And I know the grocery tax credit, it's got kind of pros and cons on it. Some folks think it should be done away with altogether. Others say, well, this is a way to get people that are non-residents who come into Idaho for part of the year to help chip in on our tax revenues. But one effect of the House Bill 231 is expected to reduce state revenue by 50 million. So,
Right.
where did you fall out on that one?
I voted for it. Again, one, it was a tax reduction, and that was the second, really, it's property tax and grocery tax are the two things that come up the most from people when if you meet them at the fair or you talk to them by knocking on their doors. But those are the two issues. So I am in line with those that believe that if we're going to have a grocery tax, at least we can get some money out of the people that visit here, and we can capitalize on that income. So raising the exemption, I think, makes sense for that. I think a family of four could spend about, that's about $10,000 worth of groceries, if I get my numbers right. So that made some sense to me to give some relief there. There is an option, although I don't think many people will really take it, is to do an itemized, to do their itemized deductions. I think they can get it up to $250 a person if they itemize.
Oh,
But I'm
really?
not sure there's that many people that would want to do that to that detail, but I think that's an option as well. So, but anyway, it did improve. It is an improvement, a small one, but it's still there. And I voted for that.
Yeah, I guess a large family with a huge bill and save all those receipts could take
Right.
advantage of that. Okay, one more on the tax cut bills, or the this one actually isn't a tax cut per se. House Bill 93 provides a refundable tax credit for education expenses for families, including tuition in private and religious schools. It will, as a tax credit, reduce state revenue by about 50 million. And where did you fall on that one?
I did not vote for, I voted against that. I debated against it and in a number of different places. I didn't, if we, when we talk about tax relief, I didn't feel like this was really tax relief. It was a redistribution of wealth. And that is that if we want to do tax relief, I think the grocery tax is a true tax relief. It goes back to everyone that's all of our residents. Property tax goes back to either property owners and or if it's a rental and it goes back to property tax reduction. But this I thought was $50 million that would be for a tax credit that goes to a pretty small segment of our population really. I think the expectation or the belief is that we have about 10% of our students are in private school. And that I just didn't feel like that $50 million was really going to go back to the 50 plus thousand people that live in our district, that it really would go across the board and get to our full population. Plus, we don't really have very many private schools in our area. So, the belief is that most of the private school benefit would come to the Boise, Treasure Valley area, some in the Twin Falls area, and then again in Idaho Falls. We do have a couple of private schools, and I do know, there's a couple, there are some students in our area that would benefit, but I didn't think it would help the majority of the people that live in our area. So I voted against it. There were other reasons. There's very little accountability to it. Most of the other states in our country that have gone to this type of a offering, those numbers have been inflated almost immediately. Arizona is, I think, is up to 10 times as much now into their tax rebate system as they had to begin with. There was talk before we walked out of here that the Empowering Parents Grant would be rolled into this grant, and it would so that would go from 50 million to 80 million, and that was only a month or so after House Bill 93 went through. So it was not, but the dialogue is already, it's kind of the system's already set up that it could grow significantly, and there were no brakes put on that potential growth. We'll just have to wait and see how that goes. But I just, for a lot of reasons, I just wasn't comfortable sending $50 million back to the private schools. Yeah, another piece of it is historic. I think in like Arizona, for instance. I think their tuition rates all jumped up 10 or 20% because of the increase in interest and or the increase in for more students or just the fact that people were willing to pay more because they were getting a tax credit. So it just kind of messes with the market, and for all those reasons, I just didn't think it was right.
Okay, well, those were the four big tax cut bills that help you establish the budget. And in our remaining few minutes here, what legislation came up other than these that you felt were would be of particular interest or value to the constituents up here in District 1?
A couple of them, I thought that we only have limited time, but a couple of issues that came up was I think it was House Bill 389, and that empowers the Idaho Department of Lands to respond to fires on federal ground. And it allows them to do that, what's called first in, meaning if there's smoke that's seen in the forest, for Forest Service ground, then IDL could self-dispatch and go. Historically, what happens is there'll be a, I think they call it a column of smoke in Forest Service area. it'll be up to the Forest Service to respond to that. And if they're busy, if they have a lot of calls, they may not get to that fire for a few days. There were stories here in the Capitol that it could take them a week to respond to a smoldering lightning strike, struck fire. And then in the last couple summers, a number of those fires have then blown up because they haven't been extinguished and then turn into a 100,000 acre fire. So House Bill 389 empowers IDL to actually go out and go out on federal ground and extinguish those fires. And I think that's going to be a helpful thing. We've all experienced the smoke that we get in the summer from different fires from outside of our county, but certainly impact our summer for sometimes for several weeks. So I
Yeah,
think
we've had
that's a
some big fires in the county too, down in
yeah.
Bayview a few
Oh
years
yeah.
ago. There were a number of
So
structures that were lost.
that'd be, I think it's helpful just to recognize that the state can take care of itself just a little bit more. There is an option that the state can go back after to the feds and say, we should get paid for that. They do have existing contracts to cover some of that. But I thought just the overall spirit of we're going to take some responsibility for the area that's in the, for the ground that's in our area, that even though the feds may have control of it, and be responsible and try and get those fires out so we don't have to deal with the smoke. So I thought that was a that's a plus. And then we worked on a few different resolutions. Senator Woodward and I co-wrote a resolution for the Albany Falls Dam to call on our federal government to take faster, better action on that problem. We had a hearing here at the end of March with several experts that came in and testified that we have the ability to fix this dam in a shorter, much shorter time, and how important it would be for us to do that. So we did that in late March, and then we ran followed through with a joint memorial through the Senate. In fact, I'm here today at the Capitol writing a report on that to send that off to our federal partners as well. We also I ran a joint memorial through the House on the Equal Access to Justice Act. I know that sounds like that's a mouthful of stuff, but the Equal Access to Justice Act has been used to pay legal fees for a number of people that have sued the federal government. Mostly it's gone to pay for Social Security and veteran services and people that have had taken issue with our federal government's reaction to these different issues. But it's also been used against some timber sales, mineral extraction, and even just land use in our federal areas, and slowed processes down. And just for that reason, we've not had as many timber sales as we could have. So this joint memorial just asks our federal government to look at that again and not question the Social Security or the Veteran Services benefits, but certainly to question the natural resource and environmental issues that this bill is helping pay for. So hopefully that'll help some there. And then last but not least, we ran a fire district consolidation bill that should help our fire districts consolidate if they want to. And there is an appeals process from the from our residents' perspective as well. So it's not a tax shift or a open door for tax increases, but it does encourage it does allow fire districts to consolidate, which should have benefits to those that actually deliver the service, meaning they don't have as many fire chiefs, they'll have more firefighters and they can have better equipment. And save on the administrative end. I think that's a Idaho way to get better service and something better for our community. And then last but not least, we did some changes to our state EMS system, and got them to a different division of the state. Instead of being in health and welfare, now they will be in the military division. I think that'll be a little closer eye on their operations, as all of our EMS responders know that there's a grant system to help pay for ambulances, and hopefully we'll get a little better service out of them by being with the military division. So those are all small improvements, but I think important ones for us locally.
Well, there was one bill passed by the House I wanted to ask about. It would have ended the ability of private organizations leasing public spaces from banning firearms. And this, of course, would have affected the festival at Sandpoint very specifically, since
Yes,
the
sir.
festival bans firearms at the Memorial Field when they're having their 2 weeks of events there. That bill ended up dying in the Senate, but it did pass the House. What was your take on that, and how did you vote on that one?
I voted against it. I looked at it and I voted in favor of other Second Amendment bills. But in this one, it actually sought to expand the Second Amendment and it would take away the private property rights of our festival. As you know, the festival brings in about $4 million a year to our county throughout the economic just the for their local economy, and a considerable amount of money to the city of Sandpoint. They've had this litigated in court already. I think there's been more than one court case that's found that the festival is within their rights to limit access, just like they do in a lot of other public venues, that they have private security cover these areas. It was mentioned, it was asked on the floor during the debate for this that if this bill went through, could somebody walk through and then enter the festival with a long gun? And the answer was, well, yes, that would be allowed. And I think I'm not, I just, I was concerned about that, but mostly it was just the private property rights that we would have a private property that someone came in and leased for a fair market value, and that we would take that right to govern that area away from them and say, no, you can have this property, but you just can't have it for everything. You can't make all those decisions yourself. And I don't think that's the Idaho way. So it wasn't an easy choice, but nonetheless, I voted against it, and then the Senate decided not even to hear it. They didn't like the idea, and I won't put, just guess exactly why it was that they said they wouldn't hear it. But I feel like they felt the same way that it went too far.
And it would affect
So,
a lot of other municipalities, not just Sandpoint, of course.
oh sure,
I've been selling them around the whole state.
Another guy that voted against it was a guy named Rick Cheatham, and he's from Pocatello. And he, right after the vote, he goes, I know why you voted against it, because you're voting for your community. And he said, me too. He said, we'd have at least a dozen different, music events in my county. And he said that they would, he goes, I know that the acts won't sign up with that kind of a open door.
Open carry, yeah. The musicians themselves won't even book
Right.
those kind of venues. So,
Right. Right.
Mark Souder, our first district representative in the Idaho Legislature. We got a little tiny bit of time left. Anything else you want to bring up before we have to conclude?
It's been an honor to serve our area. Lots to do between now and next session. I'm already starting to work on some other bills. I just got off the phone a little while ago with one of the doctors here in the medical community in the Treasure Valley, and what can we do for women's health? And if there's a bill that we can work on this summer, as you know, Senator Woodward and I started a bill this year, Senate Bill 1184. It got printed, it didn't get a hearing, but we're going to work on that some more this summer. So just lots to work on, but healthcare and education and taxes, they're all big issues in land use for our area.
And I will throw out a mention that you've scheduled with Senator Woodward a town hall at Sandpoint Community Hall on Saturday, May 3rd, I believe is the date for that.
Yes, sir.
So that's the time that anybody can come and throw questions at you.
Yes, that's true. Yep, we'll do a wrap up. So look forward
Yep.
to it.
And KRFY is going to be there. We're going to be broadcasting that live from the community hall. So if people can't make it in person, they can certainly listen in.
Oh,
Well,
great.
Mark
Thank you.
Souder, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks,
And
Chris.